This is the Amp Hour Podcast, recorded February 22nd, 2017, episode 337, Fake It Till You Make It.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
What's up, nerd?
Hello, nerd. How are you?
And fellow nerds.
Yes.
Out there.
Oh, yes. Our nerdle audience. What was it? Nerdle?
Nerdle. Yeah. Yes. Nerdle is
nerds,
the
all nerds and nerdles and aspiring nerds. And yes.
No, a nerdle is an aspiring nerd. Yes.
Yes. Fledgling nerds. And someone said it should be nerdling. Whatever. We're overdoing it.
No, I like nerdle.
I like nerdle too. It's kind of like, sounds like turtle, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. What's new? How you been?
Busy.
Yeah? What's going on? More shipping?
More shipping.
Yeah.
Yep. All sorts of stuff. Just business stuff and trying to get things done and trying not to be lazy about it.
Cool.
Yeah. That's half the fight.
Yep. You've been building stuff? Anything? I guess we could start with that.
I've been building. I'm about to probably do that this afternoon. Yeah. I'm going to be doing I'll be doing a PCB layout this afternoon.
Nice. So what kind of stuff?
That's a follow on to my Hixie tube counter.
Oh, cool.
Thingamabob.
Yeah. I like that stuff.
So, yeah, there's a lot of people have been asking for that, and fair enough.
Yeah. You know? That's great.
So, yeah.
I just got a DigiKey order, and that's always a nice day when you get the parts in, but I am still waiting for PCBs. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you can get your parts next day or same day.
Oh, yeah, I don't pay for that stuff, though. Yeah. I mean, because I'm using Oshpark. My standard setup is, like, Oshpark and DigiKey because I'm in the States. I mean, it's different everywhere.
Yep.
And, you know, I'll go other places if I need to.
But who should I use for my new board? Because I don't get boards made that often.
Like
these days, and it's like,
yeah, you could do a little bit of PCB Shopper. Isn't that the site?
Yeah, PCB Shopper or something like that. I don't know. I do like trying out new services.
It's not very important, and like if it messes up, it's not
not important. But I don't want to wait a month for it. You know,
I want
I want it in like a week, kind of thing.
You're willing to pay for it? Because I mean, honestly, that's what it comes down to.
Oh yeah, but it's like $50. It's like, you know, like or something. You know, which is nothing really.
Right. I've still gotten used to the Oshpark flow that I don't even go investigate it. But I know there are some cheap. Some people tell me about that stuff too. They're like, you know, you could go elsewhere and get it cheaper, and you know, get 10 boards from China, and they'll ship them real fast and stuff like that. And it's true. I'm just ain't broke, don't fix it.
So how long do you wait for your Oshpark ones?
Most of the time it's about 2 weeks. Depends. I mean, like they'll get placed on the panel the same day. They did just announce that's one of the items we have on here. They did just announce that their Swift service got moved up. So as long as you're on like the two layer panel and any board share, whatever the most common thing is, if you're on the most common part of a board share, then you'll obviously move up faster. You'll get through you don't have to wait.
But most of the cheap PCB factories in China, they board share, but you don't know it. Like,
right, of course,
you know,
it's not
part of their thing. It's like, you know, no, here's a quote for the board. It's, you know, $20 or whatever, and plus shipping or whatever, and you just get it.
Yeah, it's not like the panel, like the fiberglass panel is like, they're like, won't charge much. Yeah.
Anyway, because this is not a production thing. I just want one made. It is a one-off. Thing, you know, like normally I'll get, you know, like five made or something like that, you know, because I know
how big
it'll
is it gonna be. I mean, is it gonna be big?
It'll be a two layer thing. I could put it on one layer if I really wanted to, but there's no point because two layer is standard,
right?
It's probably about 25 centimeters wide.
Okay.
Let's say 8 inches yanks or something.
I'm literally just putting it into PCB Fab or the shopper right now as we do this.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
25 by what?
Well, actually, that's what 10? I've got to do this afternoon is get measure the exact thing. Oh, yeah, it'll be maybe, 10. Let's say 25 centimetres by 10 centimetres.
Number designs, yeah. Quantity. You only need one, right?
We're doing live design work here on
Right. It is a great site. If people don't know about it, it's a great site, and highly recommend it.
I just need one.
Yeah. So, and there's reviews and stuff on there too, so that's nice.
What is their list of different suppliers that they cross-check?
The ones that popped out for you were Easy EDA, AllPCB, Bay Area Circuits, Seed Studios, Shenzhen 2U, Elecro. I mean, like a lot of these are PCB Way, Euro Circuits, like Dirty PCBs, that's Ian's thing.
Yep.
PCB Card, that's one that you used to like that, right? PCB Card?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I used to, yeah. They were like the first that came out to do low cost PCBs via the web. Like they were one of the first, and it was groundbreaking when they first came out.
Yeah.
And then they got swamped. Word, I can remember using them, and then, you know, 6-9 months later, word got around on the forums and stuff, you know. There was no YouTube back then, you know. It was, well, you know, no YouTube channels.
Not appreciably,
kind of
right,
thing.
Right.
Yeah, no. Basically, we didn't exist. Us electronics YouTubers didn't exist. And, anyway, so word got around on the forums or whatnot, and then they started to increase their... No, the first thing you notice is that you used to get them real quick. You used to, like, 3 days and it'd ship. You know, they'd say 7 days, but it'd ship in 3. And then there was 5 days. And then it was actually 7. And then occasionally they started to slip actually meeting their timelines. And they came out and said,
They pulled the Yogi Berra, huh? That place is so popular, no one goes there anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
And then their prices started to rise and everything. But I still liked them. It was my familiar service.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And that's the thing. And that is the goal of any company that's doing, like, you know, bottom-up type stuff like that. So, yeah.
But there's just so many.
There
out
are.
There,
well, that's great.
You know? It's just
we're in a golden age for that. Looks like there's even one in Australia. That's interesting. Breadboard Killer. Do you know them?
Yes.
Boy, that's not cheap. Okay. But, no, I mean, you're going for a speed, so.
And I think they're 2 or 3 weeks or something like that. Yeah, so I've actually met him. I interviewed him at the...
Cool.
At the Maker Faire.
Yeah.
Yep. Video's somewhere on my site. Yeah. But, yeah. Get price. Default time. Here we go. Well, what do I want? 7 business days, let's say. Ship to...
Oh, that's not too bad.
Australia.
Right. I mean, what is the shipping like just in general for China for you? I mean, like, is it...
Oh, it's generally DHL? $30. Yeah, it's generally, $30
like
DHL.
Flat. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, it's basically like a flat DHL rate. If you want it in a hurry, if you get like an EMS type service, then it can be cheaper. But most PCB suppliers won't use that. They'll use like, you know, FedEx, UPS, DHL kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I can use my own account, but... actually costs more. Yeah.
Like your business account kind of thing? Like
your
number?
I can use my business account. I can just give them my account number and they can ship using my account, but it generally ends up being more expensive.
I have never gotten to the point. So I have a number as well, I think, for both UPS and FedEx. And I've never, it's just like an accounting thing for me because it's like I'm not shipping enough stuff to ever get a discount, you know?
Oh, right. Yeah. No, I've got a proper business. No, I'm doing big dollars with them these days. And but it's still not as cheap. Like, I ship from DigiCo. I thought I'd try this, you know, when I got my new account number. I was thrilled. Hey, I got a DHL Pro business account, you know.
Yeah.
And so I had some parts shipped from DigiKey to here. And it was more expensive than what using my own account and than it was for them just to ship it using their account.
Right,
so,
exactly. Because they've got the volume anyways. They get all the breaks, right? So...
Hey, I'm up for the cheapest one is $137 plus shipping.
That's the cheapest?
Which is
PCB
Way.
Yep. That's the cheapest?
PCB
How many did you put in? Really?
Oh, sorry. They're going to give me 5. So they're going to give me 5. But I actually put in 1. Some
I've
of the others are
$30
one.
$30 each.
Not one of them is $400 for one.
Wow. Well, and that's the kind of prices that I'm used to. Like used to. That's what I started with. I remember the first thing I started. I used to do advanced PCB for everything, and it was like the two layer five of each board special. It's not a terrible special. You can get a lot on the board, but
when I was a boy, You know, it was a panel was $800.
Yeah.
Right. And it doesn't. That's what it would cost you to get a board.
And
there was no panel sharing
too, right? I mean, like you got to. Right,
yeah.
Really,
yeah. That was money from 20 years ago. You know,
I said 1800s, but okay, yeah.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, the late 80s, early 90s. You know, it was $800 for a panel, and you had to penalize. You know, it doesn't matter how small or insignificant your board was. They would not share them. There was no shared PCB service, right? Yeah. So you would pay for the board. So you'd throw your personal designs on. This is what you used to do. You know, so you're getting
just
a board made for
and
work,
yeah.
And you went, well, I'm paying for this anyway. So you got your own personal designs. Just throw them on the panel.
Yep.
You know, so yeah, and you got all your personal boards made for free, which was kind of nice. So. Yeah, anyway, PCB Way at 100, it's $102 for the boards for five. So they're $20 each.
Yeah.
And there's DHL shipping is $20. So 137. And that'd be US dollars.
Oh, that is. Right? I was going to ask.
So,
yeah, because it's pretty. Yep. It's a pretty weird exchange
rate.
See,
so for
right
me
now.
To get, if I want that one board, just one board in a week, seven business day, that's business day, so like week and a half plus shipping.
See, yours is showing different than mine, because maybe you put in something else I didn't see. Yeah,
so. I just put 25 by 10 centimeters, two layers, least expensive, cheapest, blah, blah. I just left all the defaults there.
Yeah, me too.
Includes stencil, no, not required.
Oh, maybe
no,
it's just because
of
the ship too. That's probably what it was. I bet I changed this.
Yeah, ship to Australia. But still, anyway,
ship to Australia,
do you put
seven
business days?
Yeah.
Do you put 7 business days?
No, I didn't. So
there you go. Yeah. That's why. Look. If I bump it up to 15 business days, right?
Oh, I see. So I'm looking at it based on the shipping time, but that's actually after the processing, then, right?
Yeah, right.
Like airmail.
So
would
if
be...
I if I want to wait 15 business days, easy EDA in China is the cheapest at $33 for five boards.
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay. Yeah. No. $33 for five boards plus $6. 90 express, it's still $81 US.
Yeah, that's true.
So I only need one of these. So you got to remember, you know, that's like
right.
And then Seed Studio, that they're $55 for five boards plus $11 postage. Anyway. Right.
Yeah, I actually found out that
I'm up for at least $100 or $150 just to get this one board made.
Well, and so I saw on here there's a tab now too for assembly, but I didn't realize that there's a bunch of local companies around here that are bundling, and actually that workspace I'm working out of MHub, they have an on-site. I've been posting pictures of the equipment there, but they have an on-site pick and place run by an outside company called Twisted Traces, and they're doing the same thing with like a bundled assembly, so you can get like one or two boards on a panel, and what it'll be is like they're going to use like the open parts library. So you can just design in those parts, and then before I was talking to Brian, the guy that runs it, he said before they actually put the whole thing through the oven, they'll let people come in and hand place. So the solder paste will be there, but then there's a manual pick and place, so you can like you can go and put your special parts on that wouldn't necessarily be on the machine.
Sit down and do it yourself, and what then you go feed it in the oven because you can't leave it there. You've got to
right. They
feed
might actually run the
away.
Whole thing through again. I'm actually not sure how that works, but like because like the panel, if it's a panelized, right, if it's got six different designs on it, you have to wait for everybody to finish placing their parts. That could be detrimental, but
well, solder paste has a limited once you take it out
and
apply it to the board, you've got to put it in the oven within like 4 hours.
Yeah.
You can't just leave it lying around for a couple of days.
Right, because it'll evaporate just
because
it's got like VOC type.
Yeah, right. Thingy, my bulbs in it.
Right, yeah. something chemicals.
Yeah.
So, there'll be something like that. I guarantee there are bundled services like that. I had never seen them. So, I'm excited about that.
Anyway, so the reason that the people might be going, oh, Dave, you can get this board cheaper, blah, blah, blah. The problem here is size, okay?
Right. Yep.
25 centimeters by 10 centimeters is a largish board. Most people don't get, but you know, when you're talking, you know, most people are, you know, like in the hobby sort of area, they're just dicking around with little Arduino sized boards. And yeah, okay, you can get one at Dirty PCBs for $5 or something, right?
Yeah.
But you know, when you pay for board area,
right? Well, I mean, even you know? So going back to Osh Park, right? So that'd be what if it's a two layer. That's 3x10 effectively, right? Like almost 3x10 in inches. And then that's 30 square inches times 5, that'd be $50 a board. So you're right. So that size versus the size trade-off is pretty large. So what is for yours is big just because of the fitting in the case that you have, or the voltage spacing.
Yeah, it has to fit the object. It's mounting all these 8 segments on there. So you've got it has to be X wide to mount all these things on. So
It's a material thing.
People will go, oh, make your own. Oh, yeah, I probably could.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, maybe I could make one, you know.
But it is high voltage too, so that's maybe less reason to mess around with that.
That doesn't matter. It's only 180 volts. She'll be right.
Okay. good luck, buddy. And that was the last we ever heard of Dave.
Well, I could do it myself just as because I haven't made my own boards for years. I could dig out my old UV box, or I can just shove it out in the sun. It's, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's Australia and it's summertime,
That's true, right. The board might melt, but you know.
And I could maybe do that. Maybe I could make that as a process instead of, So maybe I'll try and get it on a single sided.
Yeah.
I'll do my best. Add a few links because, I don't want to be making my own. Well, then I could make it into a video or how to make your own double sided board. You've got to align it's not that much extra work. It's just fussy, So, especially if you want to do the vias and, whatnot. So.
Right.
Well, I don't miss those days of making my own boards. I can't imagine you would.
I mean, that's even at $80. I mean, you'll spend more in your time, right?
Takes
more than an hour.
Yeah. No, exactly. So but if I can make a video out of it, then
sure.
That's a reason to do it. But no,
we're now talking about the scourge of being a video blogger, right? You think you can't do anything without having a camera on.
Turn everything into content.
Yeah, right. That's the downside.
It is.
Yeah. I've been building a new board. Actually, I got inspired by a student, but I talked last time, not last week, but last time about that header that I've been using. And some people asked about it. There was a video last time in the show notes from that. So two shows ago. But I've been thinking about it, and I've been thinking about doing some like industrial style boxes. And I've been looking at RS-485, which I think you've said you've used in the past, right?
Yeah, I've used RS-485. Yeah. Yep.
So I was wondering, and I asked on Twitter as well, but like, what do you do for cabling for that?
I've used custom cabling before. It's gone through the couple of times I've done it. It's gone through the product under test.
You're saying that it like actually plugged into the.
Testing and popped out the other end of the product 150 meters down the line. Yeah.
Gotcha. Right. So the product actually had RS-485 on it as well.
No. The product had wiring and we were simply talking to the other end of it.
Oh, interesting.
It's a product specific thing.
And that's kind of what there was a lot of answers, and I do appreciate that's what I like about Twitter, actually, like putting those kind of questions out and just kind of getting a range of answers. But everyone pretty much landed between like single pair shielded,
single
if you can,
twisted pair, yeah, single, shielded,
yeah,
you know.
Exactly, right. And you can,
it doesn't
get that,
have to be shielded, but
yeah, and shield is just nice, but you don't have to. And then you ground one end or whatever. And I was really hoping that Mike Harrison would eventually respond, and he did, because I know he does RS-485 for a lot of his lighting stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if people don't know too, I remember the first time I heard about it, I'm like, well, why would you use that over RS-232? And it's just
it's better. Balanced.
It's just way better. it's differential.
It's more
voltage tolerant usually.
Yep.
It digs so the differential, you can dig the signal out better. I think it's higher speed. Is that right?
Oh God, now you're stretching my memory.
Well, so the things I know about it can go a very long distance. Basically, it's just speed is inversely proportional to distance, right? So the distance goes up, the speed has to go down. But most times when you're even using that kind of stuff, just because there's more capacitance in the cables and
there's
stuff
like
that.
There's more capacitance on the line, that determines the slew rate you can slew at.
Yeah. And what
slew rate you can slew at. That doesn't make sense. Everyone knows what I mean.
It's slewy, yeah. call up Slew John B. sorry. So what I landed on, though, and what a couple of people suggested, what I was thinking about is that I think I'm going to do Cat 5. And I got that's another thing I got in my box of goodies from DigiKey. I got some RJ45 headers, and then I'll just...
heaps of people do that.
Yeah.
So. RJ45. That's very common. A lot of the products I tear down use RJ45 connectors for RS232 comms between units.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I remember Keithley used to have some...
RS485.
Some kind of... I always get confused because it was RJ45, and you just kind of get used to thinking Ethernet.
And but, Ethernet, where right. it's not. No, right. no. It's, I've used RJ45 a lot in custom right. stuff, and it ain't Ethernet.
Right. right. You can try to be Ethernet. It's
because it's standard. It's cheap. You can buy the cables off the shelf. They're mm-hmm. already terminated. It right. works. Even, you know, even the cables some of them are super high quality. They're characterized. They're, you know,
right,
like,
right. Yep. Well, they said, people were saying online that, or on Twitter rather, that they don't go too far, right? With they don't try and push that too far. But I'm really not going too far. It's more about just the volume. But the number one thing.
You can easily go 100 meters with RS485 over, or a 422 over. Ethernet cable.
Yeah. That would be the absolute max I would probably do anyways. I'm just interested in this stuff just to try it out and so I don't know. It's interesting. Sweet. Cabling, all that stuff. But that was the main thing I was going to say is my number one requirement was I'm not making a goddamn cable.
I do
not make custom cables anymore. Like, it's interesting when I talk to people that are doing products, they're like, well, and eventually we'll just make a custom cable. And then like these alarm bells are like going off in my head. You do not want to do that. And almost, I can't think of a single situation where it's not worth the engineering effort to try and do like board to board. Or condense mm-hmm. it all to a single board or anything like that. Like, I mean, you do a lot of teardowns. Anything with cabling mm-hmm. in it, that increases the cost and complexity, right?
Of course. You know? Yeah, it does.
And it's normal in a lot of products, but that's just because they're trying to pack so much crap in there that getting it all onto a single board is unreliable or almost impossible.
So you've just got a single point-to-point app? You don't have like a multi-drop configuration or anything?
I think I might do multi-drop. You mean like a daisy chain type thing?
They're not daisy chain. They're all on the bus, all in parallel kind of thing.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you could have two connectors on one board and then, you know, like each drop could pass the signal along to the next thing, right?
Yeah, well, if you want to redrive it, but generally...
I don't think so. So if you think about, so if you have a master on one end, right? And then, and that is cabled now to device number two, and device number two has an input port and an output port. It has the resistor that is there, right? Because you need the...
Oh, yeah. No, it depends whether or not you're sending a signal to one unit, and then that signal is going to reprocess
it would still be a bus, 100%. It would still be a bus, right? You'd have multiple... Right. Yeah, all those signals would be on... I think if this is right, maybe this is good to talk about, but as far as I know, they would all be on this. They would have the same potential on the input connector and the output connector, right? Because you'd want to be able to pass it down the line. If people don't know about the protocol as well, it's like basically it's very similar to CAN bus, right? Where it's everybody's sitting in a line, or almost kind of like I2C as well.
Well, no. But RS485 and 422 is not a protocol; it's a physical layer.
Right, it's a physical layer.
It's a physical layer. You have to implement your own protocol.
Right, but for me, it would just be very simple. I mean, like it would not be anything fancy, you know.
It depends. Like if you've got one transmitter and just a bunch of receivers, then it's easy. But when you've got multiple devices that want to talk on the bus, you're going to have collision avoidance and everything right?
No, very simple for me. It would be one master, multiple slave kind of thing. So
So the slaves don't even transmit back.
Only if they're asked to, you know what I mean? Like you could send.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right. So you say, and then in that case, you have an address on each one. The easiest way to do it is you have an address and you go.
And another thing that I got in my kit for the first time in a long time, I've ordered was dip switches, and that was another thing I wanted to talk about.
set the address manually. I like dips. I'm a dip switch fan. Yeah. I like switches.
They are not cheap, man. They are.
They're not at all. Yeah. I know. So. Big bomb item cost, you know, especially if you get the decent quality ones.
Yeah, and I don't really know how to judge that. I mean, like, I get like the piano, they call them piano keys, so they kind of flip up or down.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if that would be good. I'm just doing it as a first thing. I mean, you could always do it with, that was the thing I wanted to kind of mention on here too, is like you can do it with what? You can do it with like selectively populated resistors, stuff like that. You could, could have a unique ID chip, but then you have to do some kind of discovery of each device that's out in the market.
And then you've got to program each board separately. Yeah. Or a lot of the time you can put in, what I've done in the past also, is to put in an ID chip that's already pre-programmed with a random ID. You used to be able to buy these.
Dallas makes those, right?
Dallas/Maxim.
The one wire.
Yeah, these ID chips. Yep. Yeah, we use those extensively in our products. Yeah, they're factory
great.
Laser program with a random, no two chips are the same code.
Right. You know, they're like 24-bit chips, and they'll guarantee that you'll never see the same number twice or something.
But then you've still got to identify that. You've got to read it back, and then, you know.
Unit ABC123 is different than ABC124, but you have to tell it, well, you want to talk to 124, right, instead. Uh-huh. Yeah, and that gets a little bit more complicated. So
we use those at Altium as well. Every board had a one-wire ID chip on it.
Really? That's interesting.
So, yeah, every board, you know, because the Altium hardware board was like a modular plug-in thing,
and that's how
we identified when you plugged in a board. Every board manufactured had a Dallas one-wire ID chip on it.
And, like, label each board then and say, how did it know that it was a FPGA board versus, a sensor board?
We actually had a test jig to program them. So at the factory, we would after the board's manufactured, we plug it in the programming jig and we'd tell it, and we... the ID chip also had some E2 PROM in it as well, right? Uh-huh. So not only did it have its own unique serial number for each chip, but also had that E2 PROM ID, you know, only like 10 bytes or something. It wasn't much, right? But it was enough to put like a product ID code in there. Uh-huh. So we would put in the ID code, the product number for that board.
Uh-huh.
So you know that you plugged in, okay, it's a PB4. You know, we know that's a soundboard. You know, so the system knew, read that code out, and knew that that was a soundboard, and then you could put in multiple ones because it could identify based on the serial number. So.
That's interesting. So were there ever issues with that though, or no?
No, it was a nice system, and it was a one wire bus, so you could just whack them all in parallel, and it would, you know, read all these when it started up. When it started up, it would read and identify all the boards. So yeah, it was sweet. So it was easy to implement on the PCB side of things as well, because you just needed a single pin, and that just paralleled across all your boards, all of your expansion connectors, everything else. So, yeah, worked well.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. It's added cost, of course, and complexity, but that is definitely an issue that I'm sure listeners have had to deal with too, right?
I mean, these chips were 50 cent a pop, you know. So, yeah, it adds to the BOM cost.
Yeah.
Or whatever, but no, it's cool. It was just, I liked them. I was a bit of a fanboy of those chips.
Yeah, no, they're great. I mean, that's
chip of the week.
Yeah, no, yeah.
I can't remember the Dallas DS24, 2404, DS20. I'm gonna see if I
going
remember.
Off the old.
Here we go.
The crusty parts of the brain, huh?
No, that's the dual port memory plus 24. Hang on. No, that's a real time clock. No, I'm getting confused. No.
Oh, he's getting old, folks. DS2401.
2401, there you go.
You're pretty close, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah. That's cool.
And in fact, I think there's several in that series. So, you know, 240 whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, great.
Cool.
Hang on. I need to know how much E2 PROM it's got in it now.
Oh, you mean like, you think you could like write other stuff into it? Like...
Yeah. That's what we did. That's what I was talking about. We would write the product ID in there. We would write the model number so you could identify the difference between an FPGA board and a peripheral board.
I thought you were storing it on a different... I'm sorry, I thought you meant you were storing it on a different...
No, okay. That's what was great about this chip. Not only does it have a built-in unique 64-bit registration number, but it's got... how much? E2 PROM. Come on.
Hmm.
Anyway, yeah, that might be worth.
Sorry, are you saying that you would program this chip on the?
Yes.
You would program the chip separate from the device then as well, or you
program the device. We would solder it on the board first.
Okay, you would.
We get our boards manufactured and then assembled, and then we would plug the board because it had like an expansion connector. So we'd plug it into a test jig and then we'd actually program all those boards. We had like a big array of them. You could plug them all in and program them.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Huh. Well, that's very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, like, I learned all this stuff in industry. I never really heard about any kind of this kind of stuff in school or anywhere else. I mean, I don't know.
Of course you're not. There's an infinite number of chip solutions out there that, of course, you would never learn
about.
No,
I mean, like, even just, like, the method, like, the fact that you need, you know, like, okay, I'm on a bus. I need a unique ID, that kind of stuff. Like, that kind of just general, like, so now, I mean, whenever I think about a bus now, it's like, I mean, I guess people learn that with their doing, like, I2C type stuff as well. You need to have unique addresses for each part that you're talking to, but it's just, you know, something different.
It's only when you need something, that's when you go out and search and you find.
That's right.
All these cool things and different ways to do it. There's more than one way to skin this cat.
Yeah. Well, I had I was looking through some of the subreddits, but then also I was actually advising a college kid from my alma mater, and you know, they're kind of all asking the same thing. I don't think we're quite into the panic season yet, but I'm sure we're getting there.
Panic season?
Well, you know, like their friends are. I don't know. My friends all got jobs before I did, so I was panicked.
Right. So what all the good ones are going to be taken.
Yeah, well, like a lot of the superstars that I knew all had job offers before Christmas break, right? My last year. So, cool. Yeah, I guess I was kind of freaking out by now. But don't freak out. We're going to help you out here. So I was thinking about, but like the common question is just like, oh, well, what could I be doing, right? And that's kind of the question and some of the email that I was kind of writing back to this guy as well and stuff like that. So I kind of thought about like, what would it be? What should a, you know, an EE who's looking to get a job by May of 18 months from the point of thinking about it, right? So like Christmas break of junior year, what should an EE be doing, right, in order to be getting that job so that they're going to their graduation parties and getting drunk without any cares in the world?
Well, you've got to have a project you've done.
Exactly. Right. That's it. That's number one, I mean, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would say that, you know, documenting it online, you know, like a personal portfolio site, stuff like that. That's all good too. And that's what I was telling the student too about, like, you know, like I saw the resume, I saw the cover letter, all that stuff, but I asked, you know, where is the portfolio? How do I find your actual work? And, you know, you could do that a lot of places. So, you know, websites too. I think it's good to have a personal website, but.
Oh, you don't necessarily have to have it. You just take your project along to.
That's true too. Yeah.
The interview, and but then again, how can people see your stuff at the resume stage before you get to the interview? Right.
Well, and I was talking to a very successful engineer as well, and they were mentioning that they got their job at this very interesting place because of a side project, right? And that was interesting too, right? Of like,
yep.
It happens every single day, right? I mean, like, it's always, it doesn't have to necessarily even be related. Yep. So, yeah. Ah. Yeah. So, other things I was thinking though, as well, is like, starting to go to like meetup groups and network, you know, that is depending on if you want to live where you are, right? You said you always talk about Australia. You guys kind of stick around where you grew up usually, but that's not necessarily the case, but definitely finding meetup groups.
No, but that's the vast majority of people do that here in Australia.
Right, yep. And just kind of...
If you were born in Sydney, you go to uni in Sydney. If you're born in Western Sydney, you probably go to Western Sydney University, you know, like...
Gotcha. Yeah, and so
it's
then...
It's a thing here.
And then wherever you want to end up living afterwards or look for a job, you know, like it's good to... You know, it's tough, right? I mean, it's tough to the whole networking piece, but especially if you're not on site, but you're going to find out about the coolest, like least well-known jobs if you're actually there, so... If you're looking to move somewhere, definitely get there, crash on a friend's couch, get to some meetups, you know, like talk to people, and then go back home and start sending them links to your portfolio and stuff like that, I'd think, you know. And of course, bring your stuff to the meetups.
But of course, yeah, just have a project you've done and finished, complete. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah. Well, and that's
all we ask. Yeah. It's not much.
Right. Right. And it can start. I mean, like, you know, it's like if you're not even sure where to start, just start. Honestly, I was telling someone the other day that like, so like, Boldport stuff, right? Like, just get into the flow of just be soldering kits, and, you know, like, just use it as your relaxation type thing, just to get building stuff, right? It's just kind of that muscle you got to keep working and keep pushing stuff out, and then eventually they'll get more complex. It doesn't have to be like, you don't have to wait for the, like, that groundbreaking idea. You know, you just have to build something, like you're saying, because
you're pushing for a segue here, aren't you?
Not, but we could mention that, I guess.
The two things you mentioned, meetups and Boldport, and there's a Boldport electronics meetup in London.
Dave, I can't even help it when I do a segue like that. You know, I'm just, I consider the whole world when I start talking.
I ruined
talking,
the
know?
Surprise,
no.
Did I?
Well, that's fine. Yeah. No? Yeah. Okay. So, Sara is doing a meetup in London. So that'll be good. I don't know what else to say there.
That's it. That's all we need to say.
Right. I will say Dave still hasn't done a meetup. Maybe that's something to say.
No, I still haven't done one.
Right. I'm going to Australia eventually. So, you know, eventually Dave will be found at a meetup. It's just, you know, he just won't have planned it. So, yeah.
No, I won't have. Well, I'm hopefully, like, is it next week that I'm going to meet?
I don't know.
Someone who we've had on recently?
Oh, maybe. I don't know. I don't remember when he was coming up.
So. It's in my calendar somewhere.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Anyway, they're coming to Australia. I won't say who it is. Follow my Twitter and I'll post a selfie with them.
Gotcha.
Yeah. That's the plan.
So any other aspiring EE by junior year things? Anything else you would think other than a project?
No, just do a project. No, you can...
I would put an asterisk on that, though. I would put it outside of your senior project as well, right?
Oh, yeah. Yes, of course. Like, no, has to be off your own bat, as we say here.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yep. Someone else wrote... I didn't even realize someone else wrote in on the subreddit. But also, they said, robotics team, ham radio club, tutoring, undergrad research... Yeah, those things are all good. And the thing I would point out too, is that, you know, like I'm saying 18 months out, but if you're 2 months out, right, which some people would be right now, it doesn't matter. Start right now too. If you've been graduated for 2 years, it doesn't matter. Just go, like Dave's saying, just go build something. And that's.
You could get a project done in 2 months. You know.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yep.
So.
But it has to be your original. Like maybe just take an existing design, modify it.
Sure.
You know, if you're that short of time,
right,
you know, then
if you're just uncomfortable, you know, just like I said, just build something or follow, like rebuild something else, like modify, like you're saying, like get some kits, just
that's the hardware equivalent of fake it till you make it,
right? Yeah, right? That's a good point.
Is to take somebody else's complex looking design, if they're open source, right, you've got all the PCB files, you've got the schematics, everything else, modify it, add a few little bells and whistles yourself, don't copy it. Right, because that's cheating. You might get found out, right? But, you could make a few changes yourself.
The
act of building it can be things. So you can, but what I'm saying
is that... Just be prepared to talk about what you did versus what you followed along.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As long as you can talk the talk.
Yeah. I agree with that.
People will ask you... If you bring something
people
will ask you questions about it. They won't go, oh, that's nice.
Right.
Well, maybe the...
Right, but if they do that, you don't want to work there.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you can do that, you know, and the fact is you can get a much more complex design done in much shorter time. You know, if you started your own, software-defined radio from scratch,
you don't need to lay out that 600-pin BGA, FPGA, right?
No, that's right.
Maybe start with a plug-in board for like a Populio or whatever the other, one of those Digilent boards or something, yeah. So,
yep. I mean, and preferably something where you've laid out your own board. I don't want to see, it's better than nothing, right? If you bring like an Arduino hooked up with wires hanging off it to something else,
if you made a shield, right? I mean, that's cool. If you made the shield,
if you made the shield and everything else, but yeah.
I don't know, if you did a bunch of 7-4 series logic or something like that on a breadboard, that's interesting too.
But I would prefer to see an integrated solution.
Sure, right.
Rather than just an add-on board on top of a
the more snazzy it is, the better. The more heads will turn, I think. So.
Yep.
And good luck to everybody out there. It's a slog. Oh, I don't miss that at all. If you something's better than nothing. So if you get a job, it's not your last job. You know, you can always try and move later, but try and stay in the industry you want to be in.
Yep.
If you can.
All right.
All right.
What else have we got this week? We've got, you want to talk about yet another 3D printer on Kickstarter that's failed?
I don't really want to.
No?
We can. I don't really want to.
The Tico, $3 million. Yeah, you know, it's the same classic story, you know. They actually did deliver some.
Yeah.
They had like 60,000 backers or something. I don't know, 14,000 backers.
I mean, $3 million is a lot to raise, I got to say.
That's a lot. They got a lot of money, right? $3 million. And they basically, they delivered. I think they delivered about 4,000 units, but they went, pretty dodgy, right? But at least they delivered something. But they spent all their money up front buying all these bulk parts. And that was, they said that was one of the biggest mistakes they make, is when they got the money, they went, we're purchasing power, our design's good enough, let's go buy all these bulk items. And they ordered 16,000 sets of almost every component, and they only ever shipped 4,000.
Right.
And so that's a lot of, cash just sitting there. That's a lot of, you can't use it, you can't pay people's wages. We here have some components.
Right. I was watching each month this 2000 ESP 8266 for MagFest is another link that they put on there. That was
what's MagFest?
It was like music, art, and games. Right. Fest. So it was like a blinky badge, but it was for like an outside conference type thing. And so it's CN Lore, Charles Lore. It was a really good video. I mean, it was interesting, kind of like all this stuff. But they mentioned like the same kind of thing where there was. They said like 15,000 like push buttons sitting on a desk somewhere in China,
right? Yeah,
where the footprint was wrong, and it was like, it's just short timeline kind of stuff, you know. Like that's nightmares.
Oh goodness!
But the badge looked really cool, and they did a cool video where they put it like out on the lawn and did like a Wi-Fi signal strength thing. So very cool.
Anyway, let that be a lesson to you. The other lesson to come from this one is that. Shall I try and quote them here? they basically said that they thought that they could fix their hardware problems in software.
just add more bits, Dave. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Did they say how?
Calibration? It's a 3D printer. No, they didn't really say how, but like it's a 3D printer, right? So belts and motors move, and you get slippage, and you get other things, right? So you can potentially fix some of that in software by either driving it slower, driving it more carefully. I don't know. Whatever, right?
Averaging is the answer.
Yeah. And they went, that helped, but not enough to make it a real polished product. And so they jumped into it. So they were the two big lessons, and they basically
Some things you just can't get around like that. I mean, like, I know that but mechanical tolerances, stuff like that, like at a certain point you're going to run into physics, you know, like at a, right. You know, like repeatability is like such an important, especially in mechanical processes like that. It's such an important thing. And it's like, you could do something six times and you could try and average it out, but unless you have, you need like some kind of like outside thing to monitor. Like you need like an encoder wheel then, right? If you say you're doing like, say you have a servo that's not very...
You need feedback. You need positional feedback. Right. Yeah.
Something. And it's like that just increases complexity and lowers the speed.
It's an entirely different design then, you know.
And it's like...
And the 3D printer though is the classic example of where you can build your prototype and you can get a false sense of completion. You know, like, you build your prototype, you might even build five of them, all right?
Right.
And they print out and everything. And you're so excited by the fact that it worked that you miss like, look, the layers aren't, this layer peeled off. That's just we can just tweak that in software, you know, we'll just
wait, so it was like that though? Later, it wasn't like sourcing stuff? I always figure sourcing stuff is another thing that's like, let's see this.
Well, it is, but I'm just using this as an example, a classic case where the devil is in the detail polished product. Right. You know, it's not something you can just fob off, you know, we can fix that later or something like that. You know, it really has to be solidly nailed down from the get-go before you push that order button, whereas a lot of electronics is different to that.
Right.
Right? So, you know.
$3 million.
You know, if you whack an FPGA in there, you can fix things in, VHDL later. Right, kind of thing. There's a lot you can do.
Right, but then you also have to hope that your users can change the firmware.
Right.
Ooh, yee.
Yep.
Yeah. So wait, this was $180 printer though.
Yeah, something. What was it?
Okay. So this was already a foregone conclusion. This was going to fail.
Oh yeah, no. We've talked about that before. Yeah,
many times.
Yeah. Where you can't physically make a product for that.
Right.
You know, you just can't do it.
And ship it and support your and staff and everything else.
Right? It was never going to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was $180 3D printer. And whoever did that article years ago that we talked about by saying you can't do a sub-$300 3D printer. And they were like, and they went through the math of why you can't. And, they're bang on. You know?
They're from Niagara Falls, New York. Buffalonian fail. I don't know if they call themselves Buffalonians. Yeah.
Anyway, they thought they could get around all those limitations by simplifying. It's all one big 3D extruded case, and it's like a triangle shape. So they thought they had solved the problem of cheap printers, and
Well, valiant try.
Devil's in the detail. You know,
16,000 people made the wrong decision.
Anyway, I mean, on the other hand, we may have even called this one back when it first came out. We may have even said it would fail.
Anyway. Whatever. Yeah. Another one bites the dust.
Can we talk about another Kickstarter? Which is interesting. It's got 12 days to go.
Which one?
But I don't know. The Chip Easy, the electronics component organizer.
Oh, that thing looked ridiculous. Yeah, I was not a huge fan of that.
I was not a huge fan of it, but they've raised 12 grand of their 20 grand goal. It looks like a regular component cabinet, right? But each drawer is motorized.
It's just really complex for what it is.
And actually has a LED next to each drawer, which can flash. And then it hooks up. It must hook up to a PC. I believe it must hook up to a PC.
Yeah, it does, because there's a software layer, too.
And then you program what, you know, your parts go in each bin for, like, a production kind of environment. And I can't think of a more narrow niche.
Exactly. Right. This is
right.
Here's the idea. This something like this, it seems like it actually is well done. It is manufactured, all that other stuff.
I think it's
just,
well done.
It's just not needed, right? I mean, like, it's
a cool product looking for a market.
Exactly. And if they took this idea and they shopped, like, if you did this for, and maybe this already exists for industrial markets.
We used to use these. Big companies use these systems when you got thousands and thousands of parts and components, and you would have a component store, and they would have these automated things, you know, tray and software behind it. So then I want this part. So you go down to the store. This is before the days of the internet. You walk down to the store, you'd fill out your slip, you know, that I want, you know, an extra one of these chips because, you know, I'm repairing some military board, right? Mm-hmm. And they, you know, they go away and 10 minutes later, they come back and they put it into the system. It rolls the big, you know, huge, big rollers with all the bins in it. So it automatically goes to the right bin and then pops it out. And
see, I still
bingo,
don't think
they
that
hand
that's,
you your chip.
I mean, that's still, and, like, that's just, you had more money to put towards that. I still don't think that's needed.
Oh, yeah. No,
you know what I mean?
Course.
Like, at a certain point, there is some balance point of, like, having some guy minding the store and knowing that like, well, it's in. What
it's
I do is
that
I,
over,
I, go,
yeah, yeah.
I go to bin 42E and I, you know, mm-hmm. I mark down that I'm selling Dave one of these. It's like, oh, paper. Yeah, okay.
Or you just sort them into categories. You have a whole, you know, stand full of ones that just have chips, a whole stand full of ones that just have passives,
right,
you know,
right.
And like you can organize, you know, and you just look through. You have them in sequential order of value or something, you know. It's like,
right.
Yeah, this is,
well, and,
yeah.
So there is, and I'm sure that it could, you know, like find a market or something, but I don't think, I will never have this in my lab. I know that. That's what I'm really getting at.
I cannot see where their market is. It's so narrow that, yeah, I can sell them selling a few.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, they've got 42 backers. You know, I'm not sure how much this thing is. It's like, it's 369 early birds, $400.
Yeah.
So you've got to be willing to pay $400 for a, 40 draw.
Right, exactly.
Parts and that costs $20.
I forgot that I commented on this. I said I could buy a lot of binders for $400, right? I mean, like, I could buy a lot of raw materials and organization methods.
Yeah, from China on eBay now, you just buy all these kits of parts, you know, and they already come pre-labeled, pre-sorted. And
so,
you know. And granted, it's a very neat solution, but it's just,
well, and there's other people doing this kind of thing, too. Like, what's it called? It's called Parts something, because it's very similar to Parts.io. It's Partsbox.io, I think, or something like that. But it was basically like, you know, there's been other stuff like that, that inventory management for the lab, right? So just, I want to know that when I've built 30 of the boards that I'm used to building, you know, it's like an MRP system, right? And I'm now short, or I've 5 resistors away of being out of 0 ohm resistors or whatever it is, right? That's it. Yeah, partsbox.io, that's the one. And so it's
automatically order them for you.
Right.
You know? And like, I thought this thing has the potential to automatically order things for you. But
you can do that just with software, right? I mean, either way. Scanning in, you know, you can do it with like the labels from DigiKey or anyone else, right? Where you're just like, oh, you're about to run out of component, whatever.
Well, one of the other problems with this is just the fiddliness of it. Like each drawer has like 40 drawers in it. Sorry, it actually has like 500 or something. But you know, they're little like 1-inch by 1-inch cube slots where you're supposed to put your SMD parts, right? So you're supposed to take your SMD parts off the tape and put them in here. I mean, maybe you can reconfigure the drawers. I'm not sure, but you know, like that's just not how you want to do it.
Right. Well, and I think that all this stuff, it's just like when you get to the point where you actually do need something like this, the scale is going to be so much more, right? There's a lot of overhead for these kind of, any of these systems, there's a lot of overhead.
Oh, there's always
and
overhead.
So there's that
organization.
Yeah, exactly. That
any
balance
form
point.
Of organization has overhead.
That's right. Exactly right. Yep.
Hmm.
So, yeah, well, I hope that.
As evidenced by the guy who did the video, you know, that he had that. He had that component collection that I went to see once.
Yes, that's right. Oh man, that was a lot of parts.
that was incredible.
Right,
that was incredible. And he had it all on a spreadsheet. He had this huge, massive master spreadsheet.
Did you ever find out how much he was building with that stuff? I mean, like that's the other thing. Like people that
he did actually contact me.
Oh, he did.
He saw the video and he contacted me, and I didn't hear back from him.
Oh.
So I think he wanted to tell me the history of it or something. But anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a certain thing. Is like people sometimes optimize for the system, like they like building the system. In that case, right? Great.
Right. Oh yeah. No, he just enjoyed building the system, and hey, great, more power to him.
Right.
You know, it was fantastic. Right. Then that was his hobby.
Yeah.
That was, you know,
exactly
the fact that I think he was in the parts business or something as well.
Yeah.
You know, selling like parts for obsolete gear and stuff like that.
Right.
So I'm sure it helped in that respect. But that was just his hobby. Yeah. You know, to do that. So,
yep.
That's fine. Anyway, at what point, like, you know, I can imagine coming up with this Kickstarter idea, right? But at what point do you call it quits? You know, do you go, like we talked about with this last week with Bunny, right? How he came up with this idea for the, you know, the encryption keyboard, right? And he worked on it for months and months full time. And then he finally reached the point where he went, no, I have to say this is not going to work. This is not going to sell. It's not going to, no one's going to buy this. And I have to just, you know, give up on it. And I know it's hard giving up on your baby, but sometimes it's like, you know.
Notice we haven't heard anything about Dave's kids recently. So he's probably done the same thing with his children. So don't give up on your kids, Dave. That's not cool.
Yeah. It's not.
Yeah. No, it is tough. I mean,
have people out there given up on a project like Bunny did?
You
know, worked on it forever, 6 months, and just given up and went, nah. You know.
Yeah.
I've
done it.
Done quite a few, you know.
Yeah.
And well, there's a good lot of mine that just I lost interest, but others, no, I've deliberately said, nah, this isn't going to work. And
A clean break's good, I think. It's better than like, oh, I'll get back to it someday. It's like, no, it's done.
Yeah.
Right, maybe I'll cannibalize some of the pieces for it, but It's tough, too. I mean, especially with all this stuff where there's money involved and, you know, there's funding and whatever.
Well, I don't know how many people are involved in this or what, if it's a startup or what. You know, but I don't know. Like, and hats off to them. They've produced what looks like a nice, good-looking product, right?
But just
that has almost no market.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. That's the unfortunate thing. So, yep.
Yep.
So, on one hand, I'm torn. Like, you know, I don't want to, you know, I'm not trying to lay into them, right?
We don't want this. Example. This isn't for us. So that's what we know.
No, it's not. And you know, based on my experience, I can't see how many people would want it.
Yeah.
But I could be wrong. I'd love to be proven wrong, you know, and this thing sells like hotcakes and it solves everyone's problems. But, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm torn between... You know, even not saying, just ignoring these and not saying anything or using it as an example to show people how, you know, you can just go get, you know, you can have the blinkers on and go down and think, oh, this is a great product, this is a great product, this is a great product, and if I build it, they will come.
Mm.
You know, sometimes they won't come. Right. And
yeah, okay, well, I could talk about...
How do you know that? I mean, for me, it's based on my...
Well, actually, I was going to mention that. There is a book that I've been reading.
Decades and decades in the business, right?
Actually, it was not that I was going to say. There's a book called Content Incorporated, or Inc., Content Inc.
You've always got a book recommendation.
I always got a book, I know. It's always like a marketing, pukey business book, too. This one's pretty bad.
Right.
But basically, the idea is you build the, you know, like, so let's use Mr. Jones here as a case study, right? You build the audience first, which is always the hard part. And and then eventually what the audience wants pops out, right? That's kind of like the modern thing. It's not the only way to do it. It's not the best way to do it necessarily, but it is a, you know, if you can do that and build the audience and get the people to talk back and like, be like, well, what we really need is the blank, 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 right? That's hard to do, right? I mean, or that's super valuable.
And everyone wants a different blank, blank, blank.
Right, right. You still have to distill that down to whatever. You know, I think it's an interesting idea. I mean, I think it is a very contemporary idea because there's a lot of stuff out there, right?
Yeah.
Well,
and I've been thinking about this recently with my, debunking videos.
Which I'm not a huge fan of, I got to say.
Well, okay.
Sorry.
Well, you can, after I finish this, you can tell us why.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And they have traditionally been one of my most popular videos, you know, the Batterizer, the Solar Roads, everything else, right? They've been incredibly popular.
Uh-huh.
But some of them aren't. And it's like, so it's not that, oh, I do a debunking video, it's going to be popular. Some of them are not popular.
Hmm.
And it's sort of hard to tell which ones are and aren't, or will and will not be.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, you know, there's people out there going, oh, I don't, you know, I didn't like this one.
Right.
Or whatever. Okay, but I liked the previous two you did. Well, you know, what's changed? It's just the subject matter I'm talking about.
I mean, it could be the inkling of whether, you know, like if something looks like, if you hear something enough times, you're like, oh, all these people are talking about it, and then it makes you angry because you don't think it's going to work, and then someone verifies that, right? They're like... Right.
And some people have said,
inkling.
Oh, no, like this was just a waste of everyone's time. It's, of course, it's obviously bunk. Why did you even bother doing a video on this? Like, right? Because
that's,
I found it
that's
interesting.
What I, that's
you know?
What I always say. Why did you even bother, Dave? Right. But.
Okay, so why don't you like my debunking videos?
Oh, I like when you build stuff. I like building and, you know, looking inside stuff.
Right.
Debunking just feels like, I don't know. I don't really care about it. That's just personal. It's literally just personal taste.
Fruit? Is it like...
Huh? No.
Is it because you don't like seeing people called out? Or you think it's a waste of my time?
No, it's a waste of my time.
Right,
I don't care about
then,
your time.
Then you don't watch, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Like clearly in the title, you know?
I didn't say that. I'm just saying that's why I don't like them. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. It's not that I don't like you. I like you as a person, Dave. Don't worry about that. I've been talking to you for friggin' 7 years.
Yeah. You get less for murder.
I know, right. Like, come down to Australia, punch you right in the nose, and then just leave.
Our former co-host gave me a hug.
Who? Oh, Kaiser. That guy's a big softy. Come on, man.
He's a big teddy bear.
Big teddy bear. That's right. I give him hugs too. He's yes, sir. I will have a hug, sir.
So when we meet, what would you like? A big big hug, a big sloppy kiss,
a crisp high five,
handshake a crisp at a distance, five. Or a crisp American high five. That's right, with right, a woo. Right.
Yeah.
Did you like a big woo?
Yeah. Yeah. We could have someone film it. We could jump at the same time and do like a freeze frame. You know.
Oh goodness.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. What do we got? Last minute stuff.
Well, former guest, Dave Vandenbout, wrote a cool a cool post about some of the stuff he's doing with KiCad and tying together, is it KiCad? Maybe it's not KiCad. It's just about automating, capacitor placement and stuff like that on boards, right? Like the things where you're doing a lot of it, right? So he's trying to, and that is tough, right? Especially for FPGAs when you have, you have sometimes upward with like 100 decoupling caps, stuff like that.
Yeah, but I love that detail stuff. Yeah? I wouldn't want to automate that. I love stroking my non-beard and going, oh, yeah, I'm going to put a bypass cap there because I've got the power of the designer. No, I wouldn't want that automated. Hell no.
Well.
No.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm just. That's like, okay. No, it's my design. I'm gonna know. I'm gonna say where I put the damn traces.
Yeah. Oh, actually, I think this is actually the schematic where I put level. The bypass Sorry, I think caps, this is schematic right. level. So it's just connection. Connecting by the nets, right? So yeah.
But, all right. Yeah. Okay.
But I always like Dave's posts, though, and he's doing KiCad stuff. So, in general, one thing we don't have on the list, but we are allowed to mention. Is the upcoming contest that you kind of hinted at in one of your videos.
Oh, yes. I did a sneak peek at the new Keysight scope.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we will be helping out with some of that stuff. And people should get ready. There will be a buttload of scopes to win that you may have or may not have already seen. So we'll have more.
We have some for the Amp Hour, specifically for Amp Hour.
Yeah, we will have some for... Yeah, and we'll have our own giveaways as well. But there will be like general giveaway stuff coming up. I think it's like the video contests. So, rev your engines. We'll have more details. We'll link to that stuff in the subreddit once it's out. So,
and we will be judges in the.
That's right. Yes.
In the yes, because it was a schmozzle last year where it was audience, whereas internet voting, and of course Bodie McBoatface won it.
Yeah.
And
right.
Everyone.
Like we talked about 2 weeks ago. Yep. Yeah.
And everyone got in uproar, rightly so. It was, people were buying votes and that sort of crap. No, so panel. Our decision will be final.
That's right.
Yes.
In charge.
I like that.
Yeah. other things. We had Zach on a while ago, but I cannot understand it, but whatever. There is another video game for making hardware.
He's done another one.
No, it's not Zach. That's what's crazy. It's a different publisher.
Oh, sorry. All right.
Yeah. MHRD. It's like you actually. It says you're designing various hardware circuits in a hardware description language. When does this stop being a game?
So this is actually a thing now, right? With two different companies doing this. This is a thing.
Yeah.
This is a genre.
I think that's the idea. It's like this is a genre, right? What did he call? I forget what Zach called the game. They were called like Zachisms or something like that. It was something like that.
Oh God! Yeah. Right.
But. It says, welcome to MicroHard. Become a hardware engineer. Join the hardware startup MicroHard. Immerse yourself in the technology of the 80s and disrupt the tech industry. So.
That's great.
That's
not like.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's brilliant. Like, why wouldn't you want to play that?
Again, we still want to hear from you. If anyone ever sees Zachtronics or not this one or anything else on a resume. You have to screenshot it and send it. You don't have to send us all the resume,
yes,
right?
Please.
Yeah, there's privacy stuff.
Just screenshot
we need
us the
to,
bit.
We need to hear about that because it's going to happen. Yeah. And it's going to be one of our listeners reading these resumes, and they'll know.
I'm like number one in the end, and we'll have contests, you know.
Yeah,
and like
right.
I'm the world, you know, the world expert in right. in, you know, playing whatever.
Oh,
micro
man.
Hard.
Yeah.
You know,
that's crazy.
I'm like the world champion in micro hard.
Right. That's really weird. Yeah.
What's the world coming to?
I don't know.
I don't know. Yep. We'll find out next week.
Yeah, I think we will. yeah, I guess there's other links on the subreddit, like usual. Thanks to our Patreon people, as always.
Do we have anyone on for next week?
We sort of do. I'll tell you about it after the show.
No, there you go.
Yeah. And
I'm always the last to know.
Yes, that's right. People, there are a couple of people have been like, so like the I'm still working on the site, but if you click the title of the post, there are notes. Every week, there's notes. So if you're like, yep. I wonder what this link was. I've had a couple people ask me what links were for the header thing I was talking about earlier in the show, but also mm-hmm. other stuff. There are show notes, so please check those out. And if we're yep. missing anything, post in the comments. So that's all I got.
Sweet. That's all I got. Cool. I'm done.
All right, man. Well, thanks. We'll
go do something useful.
Yeah, go make a Nixie thing, you know?
Yeah.
All right. Talk to you next week.
Catch you next time.
So, for next week,